There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL draft this year. My name is Ben Solak, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Greg Horlbeck. We cover trades, free agency, and the draft, which is, obviously. We'll tell you about everything, which includes which quarterbacks are good, which quarterbacks are bad, and which quarterbacks are just Kirk Cousins. That is the Ringer NFL Draft Show. Search the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
It is Monday, March 25th. In following the streaming wars, we focus a lot on subscriber numbers, how many people are signed up to a particular service, and whether that number is going up or down and by how much. But increasingly, the key metric for streamers is time spent on the platform, not necessarily subscribers. That's a function of how big the universe of subs is, of course. With 250 million subs worldwide, the time spent on Netflix is going to be a lot bigger than, say, Apple TV Plus, which has never released subscriber numbers, but most analysts think it's about 25 million paid, with millions more on free trials when they buy Apple products. The reason this is so important is because these services now sell advertising, which requires actual eyeballs seeing the ads. And the formulas all suggest that when you actually watch content on a service on a greater frequency, you are less likely to churn out and stop paying for it. And in the battle for attention, these paid services are now competing against all the other screens out there, including free video services like YouTube and TikTok, social media like Instagram, even dating sites. In the US, where we have the most reliable numbers, that means we monitor Nielsen's monthly gauge report, which measures the percentage of viewership by service on connected TVs. This past month, YouTube was again the leader, beating Netflix. It had 9.3% of viewership. Then Netflix, then it drops a lot to the rest of the services. There's also some new data from eMarketer, which measures specifically the time spent on each platform. There, Netflix is the top service, with US users spending more than an hour a day. But then it goes to TikTok and down from there. With such crazy competition, how can these paid services increase the time spent on their platforms? And how can these paid services compete with free, especially for kids and young adults that are being raised on TikTok and the others to think that's what entertainment means? Big challenges for all these companies. We've got Lucas Shaw in here from Bloomberg to discuss the attention battle in the streaming wars and how to compete with free. From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Tap. Okay, we are here with Lucas Shaw from Bloomberg once again. Welcome, Lucas.
Great to be here.
All right. So today we're talking about time spent on platforms, the battle for attention. And I feel like this has become the dominant metric as the race for subscribers has subsided when Wall Street stopped caring about that and wanted profitability. Then everyone switched to, okay, how are we making money on these services? They all have ad tiers now. They are selling advertising against eyeballs. And I feel like the dominant metric at these streaming services is now, how much time are we getting people to spend with our content and on our platform? Do you feel like that calculus has changed lately?
Well, I think the fight for attention has always been the fight on the internet, right? If you go back and look at the founding of Hulu, for example, which was sort of traditional media's first take at online video, they were starting it because of YouTube. Netflix barely existed as a streaming service at that point. They were worried that YouTube and like Yahoo and other and companies like that were going to swallow up all the attention online and using oftentimes their programming. So I think there's, and if you look at Netflix's comments over the years, that's a company that has always been hyper aware that it wasn't just competing against traditional media. It was competing
against... Reed Hastings, we are competing with sleep.
But they talked about Fortnite, they talked about YouTube. I think they've always been very aware. It's traditional Hollywood has always had a slightly narrower definition. They think of things in terms of box office. They think of things in terms of TV ratings share. And that's fine. But when your kind of industry or your part of the industry is a shrinking part of kind of the larger media business, that's a bit of a problem. And I do think that as more of these companies have gone into advertising, to bring it back to what you were talking about, the attention has become a more relevant metric, because you're not just trying to sign up subscribers. You're having to keep them in your service and keep them using it for a long period of time in order to sell more ads.
Right. So just looking at the most recent Gauge report, which is Nielsen's monthly snapshot of the percentage of viewers on TV and streaming. In the streaming category, which is now almost 40% of viewership, cable is 27, broadcast 23, and then other is 11. In the streaming category, it's still YouTube. YouTube is the dominant platform, 9.3%, followed by Netflix at 7.8%. And then it drops way down to Hulu, 2.8%, same as Prime Video. Disney is after that. Then it goes to Tubi. Tubi is up to 1.7%. That is a free service. Peacock is below that, then Max, then Roku Channel, then Paramount Plus, then Pluto TV. Way down there is Apple TV Plus and Discovery Plus. Now, YouTube obviously is in a different business than Netflix, but increasingly they are merging in the kind of person that they are going after. Someone who is perhaps more price sensitive and wants to pay less to watch ads. Someone who is just going to turn it on and leave it on. That is the kind of way to scale in terms of the volume of viewership. It's not what is the latest hit show that we can get a lot of press for and talk about on our earnings call.
The growth of YouTube on that Gauge data has been really interesting, because if you go back a few years, and I admit I'm stepping on something I'm working on, but YouTube used to be behind Netflix. Mm-hmm. And over the last few years, YouTube has eclipsed it and is now far and away the biggest streaming service. And that's, keep in mind, just on televisions. We're not even factoring in all of the viewership that YouTube gets on mobile phones.
Right.
You know, you talked about Tubi. Its growth is another one of those likely undercovered stories. Just think about the amount of time we spend talking about Paramount Plus, Peacock, HBO Max, whatever the heck we want to call it, and how little time we spend talking about Tubi, or even Apple, right? Like, think about the amount of time devoted to Apple's service in the Hollywood trades versus the amount of time spent on Tubi. It's kind of amazing.
And Tubi is now, doing my math, 6-7 times larger than Apple TV Plus. Well,
Tubi generates as much viewership, I think, maybe even a little more, as Max and Apple TV Plus combined.
Yes. I know, we'll get to Apple TV Plus, because I have a whole rant about them. But but yeah, and now Tubi is now doubling Pluto TV, which is its big rival in the AVOD space. So that's interesting. We're going to get the Tubi executives in here, talk about that. And that's just the streaming services. We're not even talking about some of the other platforms like Spotify, TikTok, Pandora. I mean, if you look at the average time spent per day in the U.S. by active users, this is a chart that eMarketer put out. For February of 2024, the average person spent 1 hour and 3 minutes on Netflix per day, followed by Hulu at 56 minutes, then TikTok at 54 minutes, then Spotify. Now, obviously, Spotify is audio, not video. Then YouTube at 51 minutes. Pandora, then it goes down to Instagram, X or Twitter at 33 minutes, Facebook at 32, Snapchat at 28 minutes, then Disney Plus. So Disney Plus is lower than Snapchat. Then Reddit, and then Prime Video at 22 minutes. So less time spent on Prime Video than on Reddit. Kind of amazing.
It's important to remember that this is among its user base. So like, yeah, the Pandora number is up there.
Right.
And I haven't checked but the user base for Pandora has been in fairly steady decline. So I'd be curious like how that compares to some of the other services, whereas TikTok or YouTube or Spotify are services used by way more people.
Not for long. We'll see if that actually happens.
Well, you're talking, yeah, and TikTok. But that's a really good snapshot of how the new media economy looks like, right? Like yeah. Netflix is the only one of the big streaming players that really competes with all these other internet services in terms of the amount of time its users are using it every day. And
Hulu's up there. Hulu's
sorry,
up there.
You're right. Hulu and Netflix are the two up there.
Yeah. In the U.S. Now, obviously, Hulu doesn't exist outside the U.S., but Disney Plus has other adult programming around the world.
And Hulu also has a customer base that's probably about 20 million users smaller than Netflix.
I mean, that is a big factor here. Your universe of subscribers dictates what your time spent is going to be, but not necessarily. Disney Plus has a ton of subscribers, but its time spent is lower, because people have Disney Plus because of the brand and because they like to watch the movies whenever they want and different reasons. They're not turning it on as much every night when they come home to see what's new as you do with Netflix.
Yeah. Do you think that this signals that these services all have a problem with young people? Because like one of the other data points that stood out to me in a different research report was basically the average person now pays for 3 or 4 different streaming services, but basically, people 30 or 35 and under prefer watching TikTok, YouTube, social video to watching traditional film and TV. And I never know what that research like. Is film and television something that they're going to age more into, right? Because like when I was a teenager, my viewing habits were very different from what they are as an adult. And one of the questions for Hollywood is, are some of these people who are kind of on their phones watching TikTok all the time going to age into watching movies, going to age into watching Netflix and Hulu, although I think those two services do okay with younger viewers? Or does this just mean that TV and is going to go from like 4 or 5 hours a day to 2 hours a day and the rest of it's going to be filled with everything else?
I think the answer is yes and no. I think they will, some of them will age into more professionally produced content and traditional providers, but at less of a percentage than we currently have now. Just because, it makes sense that when you are reared on a particular type of content, that even when you get older, you're going to still hang on to a portion of that. And the professional stuff is just going to fall to the wayside in certain ways. I mean, obviously, when you get older, your habits change and you are less price sensitive usually, and you're willing to pay for stuff and you have want a more lean back experience. So perhaps they will, but I think that's a real problem. And it's something that I think dictates every decision being made in the upper echelon of these traditional media companies these days, is how do we capture more young people and how do we transition young people who are watching an hour, hour and a half a day of TikTok into watching Hulu and Disney Plus and these other services? It's a real problem.
I worry about television at home because I think it's increasingly becoming a second screen for people. And I think that's why things like reality TV are so great now, is you can throw that on while you're looking at your phone or looking at your computer. And it's still something that you can just kind of watch in the background. Putting on a show like Shogun now for a 20-year-old, I think it's just really hard. And I think maybe movies can still succeed because people are going to go to the movie theater and make a concerted effort to go see Dune or Barbie or Oppenheimer because it's a cultural event. But a television show at home that you need to lock in for an hour, I think that's going to be hard to convince young people to do in the future.
Yeah, but it gets to the value proposition. I think that while the behavior shows that we are spending hours and hours on our phones doing nonsense, there is still the higher value proposition of a subscription streaming service and what that brings. You know, there's a reason why people are spending $61 a month on these services, and it's because they find them to be valuable. So I don't know. I mean, ultimately it becomes a function of how much you watch them, but there is an element of separation, I think, in the audience's mind, that your phone stuff is free for a reason and you pay for your digital services for a reason.
Well, also, no one who's 17 is paying for their own streaming service, right? Yeah, they're using their parents.
Even some 29-year-olds aren't paying for their own streaming service.
Craig, that stopped, hasn't it?
Maybe.
You're off the parents, aren't you?
Maybe.
Maybe?
Yeah.
It sounds like a no.
Yeah, I'm sending the streaming police over to your house.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
Do you really think that Bob Iger's, David Zaslav's, Bob Akish's of the world are thinking that much about TikTok?
I do. They're looking at the numbers we are. I mean, the trend lines are bad. And if you are thinking about the future of these companies beyond the quarterly earnings, you have to be thinking about what you're doing for young people. I mean, why do you think Disney's doing this partnership to get into gaming in a bigger way? We haven't heard much about it since the announcement, but they've got to meet these people where they are. And for most young people, they're getting their content on YouTube Kids, not Disney Plus. And if you want to migrate those people over, you've got to figure it out. I mean, it gets to the question of how these companies can capture this audience and how they can grow the eyeballs on their service. And I wonder if it might make sense for some of these subscription services to essentially adopt a free tier, a top of the funnel, whether it's buying a social media company or doing deals with YouTube. My colleague at Puck, Julie Alexander, suggested something interesting for award shows. If Netflix wants people to watch the SAG Awards on Netflix, maybe do a YouTube pre-show where people can see it for free and get excited for an award show and then bring them over. Stuff like that, where you are meeting people on the free tier, essentially, on social media or wherever, and then bringing them into your ecosystem for value add. I think there's something there, because just having this dichotomy between what you look at for free on your phone and divert yourself and the professional stuff, like, that's going to be a losing battle long term. I mean, and obviously Pluto TV sends people to Paramount Plus for additional stuff, and same with Amazon's Freevee and Tubi as well, although Tubi isn't attached to one.
I think it depends on the service. If you're Netflix, at least in the US, there's not really a need for a free tier because you have so many customers. And I do think that of all the services, they have the most programming for that like teen, tween demographic. They do a pretty good job of making shows for them. It has a strong brand. For the others, it's just how important is that audience to them, right? Like, obviously, Disney Plus kills with young kids. It's got the movies that they want to watch. But that sort of ABC Family, like, tween demo, I feel like is something that Disney needs to recapture, because that's always been very important to them.
They're trying. They're doing stuff like Percy Jackson, and they're trying. Yeah. They've been trying for a while now. It's just they haven't had the hits.
It might not matter as much to a Paramount Plus, because that's just not their demo. Right?
Or like, well, it should be. They've got freaking Nickelodeon. I mean, they should be a player in this, and they're not in my household. I mean, they get some of the movies, but like, that's not the first choice. They have the Nickelodeon stuff, and SpongeBob does well for them, but it's a battle because the kids, they go where they want to go, and YouTube Kids has plenty for them.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I think Paramount Plus and Peacock have at least talked about joining forces, is because the two of them have. But between the two of them would have a very, very robust kids library, because you'd have all the DreamWorks animation from Universal. You'd have all the Nickelodeon from Paramount Plus. Question is, will any of the kids notice or care, even if you squish it all together? How do you get it in front of them? It's not, because the issue for them is not just like having the shows, right? Like, to your point with Nickelodeon, Paramount Plus has a lot of stuff for young people, but it's how do you make your service part of the habit, part of the routine, something that people are watching regularly? That's the Netflix advantage. That's just like the default. Hulu has that as well, to a certain extent. Disney Plus is like a special service. Max, like people come in for the big HBO shows, and that whole effort to like get them to stick around for the Discovery Plus programming clearly hasn't worked.
Yeah, at least not according to those numbers we see. And I know there's been experimentation. These services have put big chunks of programming on YouTube and then, you know, come over to Paramount Plus to watch the rest of this Sonic movie or the SpongeBob, whatever. And that does work, but it's just a tough battle. How should some of these other services increase the time spent on the platform? My rant on Apple TV Plus is that they need a library. Like, what are we doing, guys? You're Apple. You're the biggest company in the world. You're not going to spend to put a library of decent content on your service. Apple TV, according to Nielsen, has the same amount of viewership as Discovery Plus, a service that was mostly subsumed by Max, is not marketed at all, and is filled with cheap reality. Apple is putting $300 million World War II shows on their service, and Martin Scorsese movies, and top-tier programming that is, by most accounts, pretty good, but they don't have the library, so there's nothing for people to watch once they finish Ted Lasso or Masters of the Air. It would be easy for Apple to do a big licensing deal or to just buy a small studio like a Lionsgate or a Paramount or something and put all the library on the service, just like Amazon did when they bought MGM. I don't understand why that hasn't happened.
I don't think Amazon looks back on that MGM deal fondly.
Well, the price was high, but okay, they may not look back on some of the franchises they got, but they did get a library to put on the service. So, and you don't have to buy it. You can license it. You can do a big deal to license a big library. I don't understand why Apple has not done that, because until they do, it doesn't matter how much you spend on Scorsese movies or Brie Larson shows or whatever you want to make at Apple, they're not going to have that viewership number until they have a decent library.
Yeah, look, I tend to agree with you. I think there's just not much else in the Apple TV service to bring you in and retain you. So you go there only if there's a show. And then even getting attention for those shows is hard because, again, the Netflix advantage is if people are in the app, they just feed them whatever's new and they watch it because it's being served to them.
But Apple has the advantage of it's in a billion pockets.
Correct.
It should be easy to get people to know about your shows. And you could say, listen, we have X movie debuting today. You can send an alert every other day with some new library movie, or we now have all of the, you know, Illumination movies like Netflix does.
It should be, but they haven't been able to do it. Part of it is that when Apple launched the service, they, like Amazon and YouTube/Google and others, had this vision. They had an ecosystem play, right? Where they wanted to have their shows as like this little sprinkling on top, but you would come to the TV app to watch Max and Peacock or Paramount Plus, all these other services, which would function as the library. And their originals were just like a little marketing sprinkling on top. Now, up to them to say if that's worked. Part of the issue with that strategy is Netflix and Disney didn't buy into it, so they can't offer their shows within the app.
Big problem.
And I think it's also just confusing, this notion of there's like TV for this stuff, but TV Plus for something else, and like what's available for free, what do I have to pay for?
Yeah, Amazon has that problem too.
Amazon definitely has that problem, but people also think of Amazon really as a store. Yeah. And I guess they do to some extent with Apple in the App Store.
Not as much.
And Apple has an opportunity to create a premium service that could be more select with what they're licensing. But look, even if they licensed a bunch, given current trends, it would get them to the level of a Paramount Plus or a Peacock? Is spending the amount of money and the headache of doing the deals that they would have to do worth it to take their service from being basically an also-ran to being number 5 or 6? I just don't know if that's worth it for Apple.
That's better than where they are right now, which is no man's land. And you can talk about the shows they have, which are generally good shows, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, it gets back to the whole HBO thing. HBO for years got all the attention. I've said this before on the show. They got all the attention for their originals, but what actually drove viewership on HBO was the movies. The first run Hollywood movies is what mattered, and that is what is missing. I mean, all of the programming decisions at Apple suggest they would like to be the new HBO. I mean, even taking over the World War II stuff from HBO, they outbid HBO for Masters of the Air, even though Band of Brothers and The Pacific aired on HBO, because they see themselves as the new HBO. But HBO was HBO because of that library of new movies. And in addition, they did originals. Apple is only doing half of the HBO model. They need to do the full HBO model if they really want this service to take off.
Okay, so you have your prescription for Apple. Do you have a prescription for the other ones?
Disney Plus is the hard one.
No, that's the easy one.
Oh, you think so? Well, yeah, combined with Hulu.
They're doing it. They're combining it with Hulu.
Sure, okay. Yeah, that is, I'm talking about Disney Plus proper. But yes, combining Disney Plus with Hulu is going to shoot up the engagement numbers, at least in this country, pretty significantly. But I don't know that it solves the problem of Disney Plus itself not being a huge time suck. The fact of the matter is, kids go to YouTube Kids first before they go to Disney Plus. And I don't know how you fix that, because you don't want to flood Disney Plus with a bunch of guys making trick shots in their backyard.
I think that's irreversible. You have to accept that YouTube Kids or YouTube is the first choice, and you have to compete for being the first choice among premium services. Much like in regular video, or in, if you're not just talking about kids, YouTube is the first choice, but Netflix is a really strong number two.
And Netflix doesn't have kids shooting baskets in their backyard. They do have a lot of the lower tier kids content that I find my kid watching, where it's like American Ninja Warrior Jr. and things like that. So Disney could do more of that. But I agree with you that they shouldn't take Disney Plus away from being premium, because that's where the value proposition is and why you're willing to pay for it.
Lean into the brand. Disney cannot lose track of what makes Disney great. They have to make business decisions around it, but you don't want to change or fuck around with how people view your company and your programming.
And all of this comes back to the biggest engagement suck and what really gets people to spend time on platforms, and that is sports. How much are we seeing sports change the calculus on some of these platforms? I think we see it on Prime. I mean, the Prime engagement numbers go up in the fall because they have football.
Yeah, it's traditional media company. Broadcast networks still justify, quote unquote, overpaying for football because they believe that it drives viewership of everything else, right? Like CBS has been out for the last few weeks crowing about how well their shows are doing because they feel like they use the Super Bowl to drive viewership of all their shows. Now CBS is...
No, but it's true that that dumb tracker show with the This Is Us guy is like the number one new show on TV, and that's only because it debuted after the Super Bowl.
That is how you justify paying more from football than you can make just from the games, because you think it benefits everything else. The interesting thing to watch for me with Amazon, football and sports clearly works. They're going to get more. But I think every extra dollar for the sports budget is potentially a dollar that does not go into the entertainment programming bucket.
Yeah.
I don't think it just keeps growing.
No, I agree. And it comes back to the ticking clock for sports on Netflix, which I believe is inevitable in part because of this engagement question. And if they are truly going to battle TikTok and the other sites for the eyeballs and engagement, you got to have sports. All right, Lucas, thanks very much.
Thanks, Matt.
We are back with the call sheet. Craig, are you sad that Euphoria season 3 has been delayed indefinitely?
Yeah, just like the cast, I'll be 30 by the time season 3 comes out.
Oh, this is like 100% predictable. The statement is, HBO and Sam Levinson remain committed to making an exceptional third season. In the interim, we are allowing our in-demand cast to pursue other opportunities. Basically, everyone's a star now. They've got other stuff they want to do. Sam Levinson is kind of a disaster. He's coming off The Idol, and the scripts are not ready, and they're basically up against the wall. And rather than get into another situation like on The Idol, where they're trying to save it during production, they're just saying, listen, let's just hit pause. If we can figure this out, we will figure it out. If not, we have until 2025 to make the show. After that, the cast gets released from their contracts and it just goes away quietly. My prediction, though, I do think it will happen. I'm not prepared
you
to
do
say,
oh, I yeah, thought yeah. you were gonna say goodbye.
I have suggested in the past that I didn't think Euphoria season 3 would ever happen. I think it will, but it'll be either they'll wrap it up with a movie, like a two-hour, like a two-hour capper.
Oh no, that's a bad sign.
Or it'll be like a 3 or 4 episode, very truncated season 3.
The show is so popular and successful. Do you think there will be a continued Euphoria extended universe? They'll bring in a new crop of high schoolers now that the Zendayas and Sweeney have aged out.
Like Saved by the Bell, The Next Generation?
Yeah. Is it going to be a younger siblings?
Except they're all naked and on drugs?
Yeah.
No, I think this is creator driven. Like Euphoria is kind of Sam Levinson. So maybe unless they could figure out a way, like, you know, True Detective style, to reinvent it with another auteur style writer, maybe they could keep the franchise going. But this was so creator and cast driven that I think that would be really hard. And I don't see HBO wanting to continue with Sam Levinson after this is done. So probably not.
I mean, with the phrase pursue other opportunities right now, I mean, do you even see this coming out in 2025?
Well, I think they have to. I don't know the exact nature of the contracts, but typically the way it works is you have a number of a specific time period in which you have to shoot in order to keep people on their contracts. And HBO specifically said that the cast was not being released from their contracts. So they're up against a time constraint here. And if they don't, then everyone's released. And then they got to renegotiate with everyone to get them back. And with that cast, that's a tough order. I mean, I think the agents for these cast members probably don't want their clients to do it. Certainly not Zendaya, maybe Sydney Sweeney, maybe Jacob Elordi. Like, they're all doing movies and doing other things for much more money. So I don't think that they're going to want them to go back to this. But, you know, maybe they like the material and they're loyal to Sam, who made them a star.
I don't know. Obviously, the rest of the cast, I'm sure, is very invested in this kind of
thing. Sure. Yeah, they probably are. On that note, that's the show for today. I want to thank our guest, Lucas Shaw. I want to thank producer Greg Horbeck. I want to thank our editor, Jesse Lopez. And I want to thank you. We will see you later this week.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.